This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Meera Sivasuthi. Malaria vaccines have been a tricky proposition, to say the least, but now there might be inroads led by genetics research in both humans and mosquitoes. Explaining more today all about malaria is Dr. Arif Anwar, of course. Welcome to the show, our resident geneticist. And you've brought two friends with you today.
Yes, I have.
Okay. And welcome to the show, Professor Lau Yiling and Professor Fong Man Yek. Yes. Is that correct? Welcome. You're both from University of Malaya, yes. Department of Parasitology, Faculty of Medicine at University of Malaya. Welcome to the show. We've always spoken about dengue at length, or we always hear of dengue, but not so much about malaria in this country. I remember my father talking about it a lot back in the day. But of course, now there is news that there has been a vaccine that's come up for malaria. So we're going to find out why it has taken such a long time to come up with this vaccine for malaria. But first of all, we always hear of the Aedes mosquito in relation to dengue, and the malaria mosquito is called Anopheles. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. And what is the difference between the two, and how does malaria differ from dengue, Professor Fong?
Maybe this is a biology 101.
I'll try and break it down.
Okay. Yes. Dengue is sort of course a virus, whereas the malaria parasites are single cell
virus versus organisms and parasite. So on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Single cell organisms, they are cellular in nature, but viruses are very simple organisms. In fact, sometimes people don't call them organisms. They are just nucleic acids surrounded by protein. That's about it. So virus and parasites are two different category of organisms altogether.
Okay. So for malaria, it's a parasite.
It's a single cell organism, which is more complex if compared with the a dengue virus.
Sure. So how does malaria transmit, Dr. Arif? And does that differ from the dengue, from the Aedes mosquito?
The vector for transmission is the mosquito.
Yeah.
That's the key underlying factor. So there are multiple different types of, there's a whole host of diseases that are passed on by mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. I have to maybe just clarify a little bit, my Professor Fong and Professor Lau. So I haven't told you this yet, Meera, but since April, I am now a semi-academic,
because
we've opened a lab and a facility inside University of Malaya in the high impact research facility.
Okay.
So now you see, I'm that's why I'm dressing more and more, more casually.
So what are you trying to say about
together.
You guys in University of Malaya?
So
there are lots and lots of.
There are multiple diseases that are spread by mosquitoes, viral diseases, as Professor Fong just said, and parasitic diseases. There's chikungunya as well.
Yeah.
And maybe Professor Lau, you want to expand a little bit about
chikungunya?
The different diseases that are spread by mosquitoes.
We often hear of chikungunya in this country as well.
Chikungunya is also a virus. It's not parasite as well. So our department only work on parasites.
Only on parasites.
So, just to add in, there are also some worms which can be transmitted by mosquitoes.
Yeah,
I think the most famous would be the elephantiasis. Those huge lakes you see in some rural villages and so on. So you can see them. Those are basically caused by worms,
it's
which is transmitted by mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't think that it is caused by. It is a parasite. It's a worm. And transmitted by mosquitoes.
Okay.
So people tend to forget that.
Okay, I'm thinking now, how paranoid should I be about mosquitoes being around me?
Yeah.
They're everywhere, right?
They're everywhere, yes.
Yeah, so there are also mosquitoes that can carry both parasite and bacteria. And currently, we actually have one project with Arif that we're trying to look at the immune response of one of the mosquito, which are really important for parasite and as well as bacteria.
Yeah. How common is malaria in Malaysia?
Not very common. Yearly, we get about 5,000-6,000 cases of malaria infection in Malaysia.
Okay.
Yeah, mostly in Sabah and Sarawak.
Because those are the states where there are interior villages, we have no access to good healthcare, and control may be difficult.
Okay.
If you compare it with Peninsula Malaysia, the cases are very low.
Okay, so what you're saying is good healthcare plays a huge role in the spread of malaria?
Yeah, control, because the logistics of controlling any mosquito-borne diseases can be difficult. Mm-hmm. Sabah and Sarawak is huge. I mean, they are huge compared to Peninsula Malaysia, yeah. and the road systems and so on. For the health workers to really go into the interior to control the disease, to the spread of the disease by mosquitoes, is pretty difficult. So that's why Peninsula Malaysia is much better in terms of
disease. Actually, I've always wondered, and it's a stupid question, but I have to ask it, is there a difference? I mean, why do certain mosquitoes harbor parasites and certain mosquitoes harbor viruses? But I mean, mm-hmm. do you also have mosquitoes that harbor both? I mean,
Yes. Because, for example, some anopheles.
And it gets worse.
Yeah. they can transmit parasites, horrible. Can produce worms, yeah. and so viruses.
Mosquitoes can carry a lot of things.
Yeah, and they are pretty unique in the sense that.
What makes them such a good, catalyst to spread, these sort of diseases? I mean, the pig is the other animal, which sort of is an intermediary before it passes on these diseases to humans, for an example.
As an organism, they may have evolved several genetic ways of being able to transmit the diseases. And their function is not to transmit the disease. They just basically feed on human beings or animals for the blood meal. So mm-hmm. basically, but just unfortunately, the person that they feed on have the parasite or the mm-hmm. virus. So no.
And it's very hard to control the mosquito growth. The control program have to be very stringent.
Yeah, we make great hosts. These mosquitoes, really. Yeah. And there was some talk about the local council in PJ coming up with a method of combating certain mosquitoes for dengue. And I'm not sure. I mean, what are your thoughts on that program? Would you know very much about it?
There are a lot of strategies to control mosquito-borne diseases. I mean, if it is dengue, which we always hear and we also read in the media and so forth, the main problem is basically the attitude of the people themselves, you see. Mm-hmm. We don't keep our compound clean, and all these things. If everybody is compliant to the ways or methods or approaches of controlling the mosquito spread, mosquito breeding, then it won't be a problem. It's just that sometimes you're lax idle.
On top of that, the mosquito develop resistance to the insecticide.
Oh, right.
Mm. Yeah, the resistance is there. So you fox one species and other species will grow. Right. So problem, it's very hard to stop.
They become smarter and smarter.
Have mosquitoes, I was reading this somewhere, that mosquitoes have adapted to living in cities where they don't need to have huge ponds
to
thrive. Yes. Really? Yeah. So all that talk about...
That depends on the species of mosquitoes. Aedes aegypti, which is implicated as the vector for dengue. Mm-hmm. They're very well adapted in an urban setting. Mm-hmm. That's why you have dengue, particularly in Selangor. Selangor has the highest number of dengue cases. Like certain mosquitoes, like anopheles, they are more in forest areas. Mm-hmm. So, but basically dengue, the vectors and the epitopes have been adapted themselves very well in urban setting. They can breed in clean water. In fact, they prefer clean water rather than dirty organic mm-hmm. water. And so,
right.
There's another related species, Aedes albopictus. Again, this is taxonomy 101. They are originally a forest species of mosquito. Now we begin to see them moving to suburban and urban areas. They have adapted very well in the urban setting. And then they are implicated as being more important than Aedes aegypti, which is the original species that transmits dengue. Mm. So, mosquitoes are very adaptable.
And here I thought the viruses were rascals. The mosquitoes are getting ahead of us as well.
Yeah, I think the numbers, the WHO numbers, and maybe you can correct me, Professor Lau and Professor Vong. WHO numbers, they're a little older than the numbers you had, but there were 50,000 deaths from malaria in Southeast Asia. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
So that's a big, that's a pretty significant number.
Yeah,
pretty
but if you compare it worldwide to Africa, almost 760,000.
Wow.
So if you calculate the rate, probably one or two
worldwide.
Death per minute. You really calculate it
And many of whom are children.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's why is that? Why the children?
One reason is that their immune system is not fully matured yet, so to actually protect themselves from the parasite infection. So basically, if they get older, then the immune system is getting more mature and stabler, and then therefore they will be able to protect themselves using.
Is there such a thing as mild malaria and more severe form of malaria?
Yes. It depends on the species. If you get the Plasmodium falciparum, then you get very heavy infections. If you get some other species like Plasmodium malariae and ovale, so it's not that severe. Okay. Depends on the species.
Why has it taken such a long time for us to come up with a vaccine?
Because the genetic diversity of the antigen on a parasite is very...
Of the parasite?
Yes, it's very variable.
Okay.
So it's very
but the vaccine isn't perfect, is it? It's not...
Yes, so far the best vaccine is really around 50, you know, 51%. Roughly around that 50% efficacy. Mm-hmm. So it's still a long way before you get a really effective vaccine which can protect 100% of the person.
This article
vaccinated.
Came out in the BBC
yes.
Two or three weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
Where this work was supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
That's right.
And GSK mm-hmm. want to commercialize it. They're trying to get approval for it. But yeah, the numbers weren't very. I mean, I can say this. You know, numbers weren't great. You know, 50%. You know, that's because you know, in my mind, you know, when you think of a vaccine, you think, well, it's going to be protected, right? You know, so if I have this vaccine, that's it. I'm protected.
But then vaccines are never 100% anyway.
Well, 50 is not a great. It's not. I think.
But then again, I guess if you look at Africa, half
it's something.
Half is significant.
I mean, you look at history of vaccine production. There are not many vaccines are really successful. You know, maybe less than 20, I would say.
Now you've
virus,
opened up a can of worms.
Yeah, you know. Well, we have polio and so on, but most of the diseases are actually still not yet.
That's a good joke. That's a good joke, Mira.
Oops.
It's very good. It's very clever.
Sometimes we are so happy to highlight the successes.
Parasites.
You know?
Of course.
It's like business, you know, for every one successful business, there'll be 10 or 20 who are more probably fail. You know?
Of course.
The same for
there
vaccine.
Are many vaccines, new vaccines coming out, and I think you get higher protection.
Yes.
So do you think that kind of effectiveness is because of diversity within
we'll continue that discussion coming up next. If you have a question for any one of our experts, send it through 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome back. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuri. With me, Dr. Arif Anwar, our resident geneticist, Professor Lau Yiling and Professor Fong Manyek, both from the Department of Parasitology, Faculty of Medicine at University of Malaya. We're talking about the genetics of research that's gone into malaria. You know, both of you have done a lot of research here in Malaysia, but how come it took people outside to come up with the vaccine? I mean, you work so hard. What's going on? What sort of research are you doing with malaria? And I understand, Professor Fong, you've been have such a passionate interest in this. You spent like 14 years teaching at the university and you have a specific interest in the DNA and proteins, molecular biology of all
of this. Yes. Originally, I was doing research in dengue because dengue was my first interest in research. But malaria, the interest in doing research in malaria came about in 4 or 5 years ago when a professor in Sarawak reported the monkey malaria. You know, malaria, they are in monkey, they have their own species of infecting them and has been infecting human beings. So, and as the research that they have done showed that it's quite a high number. So that was in Sarawak. So we were interested to look at it in Peninsula Malaysia. And true enough, there were a lot of cases also of monkey malaria parasites that have been infecting Peninsula Malaysian people, particularly those who go to the forest for recreation, loggers, you know, foreign travelers and so on. So that actually spurred me to research in malaria. So that's the reason for my interest.
So you can transfer from... The same
yes, area. Yes. So this is, to us in parasitology, this is a very exciting area of research, you know, monkey malaria infecting human beings.
Mm-hmm. You know. What is monkey malaria?
Like any other parasites, some parasites can only infect human beings. You know, there are four or five species now in that can infect a species of malaria mm-hmm. that can infect human beings. But that's what I mentioned just now. There was the recent finding of a parasite of monkey, Plasmodium malaria, which in its natural state infects only monkey, long-tailed monkey.
Right.
But now we have seen that they also infect human beings.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so this is a new finding, less than 10 years ago, 2004, when it was reported.
It was found in large population in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So that's why we get interested in this parasite and work on it. But we are not really working on the vaccination part of it. We work on the genetics.
Why not?
We're looking at the diagnosis, you know, to differentiate this species to the other species.
Right. Don't reinvent the wheel. Yeah. It's really.
And I think, you know, it's a global community, so everyone works together on different things.
Correct.
And I think, if I can add, you know, if you can understand the genetics of what's happening and the mechanisms of what's happening, and that can relate, you can extrapolate, you know, that to other different viral diseases or different types of parasites.
Right.
So, and you know, it's a community effort.
Sure. Is an individual's risk of contracting malaria influenced by genetic factors, or are they mostly environmental? Does our genetic makeup make a difference?
Of course, human genetic makeup plays a role in determining whether the person can be infected with a parasite and fall ill. You know, some people may have the infection, but they are asymptomatic. So in other words, they have no clinical signs or symptoms or any manifestation. Environmental factors do play a role, particularly, you know, when you have mosquitoes. We have a lot of deforestation in Malaysia, so the parasites carried by the monkey malaria, in my case, it's monkey malaria, so in any other case, environmental factors do play a role in terms of the spread of the vectors, the mosquitoes.
The environmental and the genetic makeup of especially the immunity of individual play a major role in defending this disease.
So it's a combination of both the human genetics and the environmental factor, including the biology of the mosquito. All these factors interplay to create the disease in the human beings.
Yeah. And that's one of the key, as Professor Lau just said, you know, the immune system plays a big part.
Yeah.
And people, everyone is different, like I talk about, you know, every month. And in fact, it's one of the fundamental things that we're doing internally with multiple groups at University of Malaya and around the world, in fact, on what happens during an infection, whether it's a parasite or a bacterial or viral infection, what happens to an individual human at the immune system level. And there are massive differences, you know. I mean, you get certain people react very, very strongly, certain people don't react at all. Certain people react very quickly and then it tapers off.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something which we don't think about. I mean, we think about that when we respond to different drugs, but, you know, humans, we also respond differently to infections. And, you know, you can think of dengue or malaria where, I mean, my father got malaria when he was a child very, very badly and almost died. And, you know, his brother also at the same time was ill and didn't seem to get too sick. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know it's very anecdotal, not very scientific, but, you know, there is very strong evidence that there is a difference in response at an individual human level.
Yeah. Okay. There's also difference between, like, some people may get the infection previously, they are protected, and they will get less severe symptoms compared to the newly exposed.
Right. So then when you decide to come up with a vaccine or you want to actually, you know, develop one, then you got to take all of this into account, do you?
Yeah, of course we have to.
Are you looking at the host or are you looking at the genetic makeup of the parasite?
If it's for vaccine, it's definitely for the host, for the human beings, we look at the genetic,
the antigenic side of the parasite, the combination of the genetic makeup of the different strain, even, you know, different type of parasite, and add it together.
Yeah. What
and
have
then,
you combined?
And then where we're coming in is we're kind of measuring what happens in the host at an immune level.
Exactly.
And the interplay.
It has
interplay
to be
is really the interesting thing, you see.
And
there are differences. And to answer your question, Mira, you know, with anyone developing a vaccine or doing research in this, it's something you have to take into account. So, I mean, as Professor Fong said, it's impossible to come up with a perfect vaccine.
No, it is impossible.
Yeah.
We have a question.
Well, improbable. Never say impossible.
Okay.
When it comes to genetics, one day.
Yes, one day, someday.
One day.
We have a question from Jeremy. Jeremy on Twitter is asking Professor Fong and Professor Lau, what steps can I take to prevent myself from malaria infection?
Okay, if you're going to the endemic areas, most all the time we will take prophylaxis before you go. So that
Prophylaxis.
It's a drug to prevent you from getting the infection.
Okay.
Yeah, you can take that.
Yeah.
Mm. How effective is it?
It's basically one or two anti-malarial drugs that you take just say you want to go into jungle, known to be malaria. So 2 weeks before your trip into the jungle, you are advised to take this anti-malaria so that the drugs will be in your system. When the parasite goes into your bloodstream upon the bite of a mosquito, then most likely we protect it, because the drug will act on the parasite.
Mm-hmm. So how different is that from a vaccine?
A vaccine is a weakened parasite or part of a parasite that you put into a human body so that the body will
stimulate
the immune response. Yeah. This is totally different. And one is a drug, and this is a vaccine. Is basically
the drug basically just directly kill the parasite.
Yes.
Vaccine is to stimulate your immune response so that the immune response can protect you from further infection.
Okay.
I mean, the key difference is the drug is temporary, right? You take the drug,
temporary.
It lasts a
after
few
two
weeks,
and then
it's flushed out of your system and it's gone. Whereas a vaccine hopefully lasts at least
longer.
A few years. Yeah. Or longer.
Apart from that, you can just prevent yourself from being bitten by mosquitoes. You know, applying repellent, wear long sleeves, sleep under.
Stay in the room.
Sleep under a bed net, and keep awake.
Don't
and just swap the mosquitoes when
the
they
best
land.
The thing is to not go. Yes.
That will stifle a lot of people.
Particularly, a lot of European travelers. They like to go to our national parks and so on. So they have to. They're always advised to take anti-malarial to prevent themselves from being bitten.
But it's not that bad. The scenario is not that bad. Unless you're really lucky to get the infection. If not, you won't.
I don't know. Maybe you're one in a million
to get a parasitologist to say you're lucky to get the infection.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a good point. A friend of mine.
This is malaria, though. Yeah. We're talking about not dengue.
Yeah.
A friend of mine came from California, and I was like, it was his first time in Asia. First time in Asia. Right? And I said, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? I said, do you want to hang out in? I can show you the city. You can go to some nice restaurants. He said, absolutely not. I'm going straight into the jungle. And he slept in some hut somewhere for 2 weeks. And he came out and he looked a wreck.
I can imagine.
Because we have the oldest rainforest in the world.
We do.
Mega
didn't get
diverse,
any infection?
He seemed to be all right. I haven't heard from him for a while. But he seemed to be right when he left.
You may want to check on him. Genetic adaptations, has that arisen in response to malaria within the population? It's like the herd community, herd immunity thing.
Well, about herd immunity.
Does that work for malaria as well?
Genetic adaptation, some of the malaria parasites, they do develop resistance to drugs. Okay, the best example is chloroquine. Chloroquine is an effective drug in the 50s and 60s. Eventually, some of the malaria parasites have developed resistance to it, just like bacteria developing resistance to penicillin and so forth. It's the same mechanism, they mutate and became resistant. So that is one form of adaptation, genetic adaptation. So they can survive even though they are being attacked by these drugs. So that's one form of adaptation.
Yeah.
Another form of adaptation is basically they can be transmitted by several mosquito species.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned just now Anopheles is basically a group of mosquitoes which can transmit. So some parasites can be transmitted by several species of Anopheles mosquitoes and so on. These are all adaptations.
What about evolution? I'm asking. I'm doing part of your job.
Yes,
Amira.
Please go ahead.
What about evolution in terms of sickle cell anemia? I mean, you can think of that as adaptation in a way, isn't it?
That is adaptation on the host part, not the parasite part. The host. Some of the.
I was actually
African.
Talking
we
about.
We fight back.
Yeah.
Humans do fight
course,
back.
Yeah.
We have a mechanism to fight back.
Mm-hmm. So we have developed some sort of.
There's also evolution, and there's by chance. It was found that some of the African populations. They have red blood cells which are slightly different than what Arif has said
shape,
just now.
Shape
yeah,
like a sickle.
Change the shape. So the parasites cannot survive in these red blood cells anymore. So these populations among the Africans, so they are not susceptible to the parasite anymore.
Because the parasite needs to be in the RBC in order to...
Yes.
RBC meaning it needs to be...
Red blood cell.
Okay. All right then. Malaria has placed the strongest known selective pressure on the human genome. And this has been since, the origination of agriculture within the past 10,000 years now. What does that actually mean?
So basically, because usually parasites, they co-evolve with a host. So in this case, it's human beings and the human parasite, Plasmodium malaria parasites. Mm-hmm. So as millions of years have passed, so the malaria parasite have evolved and also put pressure on the human population. So some populations who are susceptible to malaria parasites, they will slowly perish from the face of Earth.
Right.
So those who are
so
resistant, yeah, they're yeah. gone.
Because our defense system
yeah.
has.
So this is evolution. Mm. It's basically survival of, the survival of the fittest.
Yes.
If you are resistant to malaria parasites, you live. You live and then you, and your grandchild, your grandchildren and all will live and pass on the good genes. So this is one form of evolution.
I mean, it goes back to selective.
Yes.
You know, when I did that evolution thing, the crazy episode, you know, about selective pressure.
Yeah.
So there's selective pressure. So you know, if that sickle cell, so naturally in Africa, there are more people with that mutation because they are able to survive malaria. So you basically have more of them because they have children and they. Whereas people who don't have it tend, you know, some of them die off.
So
you get,
people who are susceptible will eventually, you know, won't have a chance to survive longer. Those who are resistant to this parasite will live longer and they will continue.
So you're studying the genetics of the parasite, okay? Dr. Arif, you're studying the genetics of the human.
We're looking at
immunoresponse.
When the parasite goes in, looking at what the host is doing.
Correct. So who's, does it matter? Does the genetic makeup of the mosquito really matter?
Oh, of course, yes.
It does? Because
we need to know the genetic makeup of the parasite so that you can strategize how to go about eliminating them, creating vaccines against them, developing drugs against this parasite. It's in the warfare. You need to know your enemy strategies, their weaknesses, and so forth. So we have to study the genetic background of this parasite. So that we can be more effective in tackling or combating the infection and the disease.
I just want to be clear here.
Yeah.
The parasite is not the mosquito.
No.
The parasite lives.
Mosquito
but the
is
host,
a vehicle.
Yes.
It's a vehicle for them to be transferred from one human to another human.
But we also study the genetic makeup of the mosquito because it's very important to the important factor to control the mosquito if you want to control the disease as well.
Yeah.
So we study the genetic makeup of tree. Parts, the parasite, the mosquito, and the human.
And the human.
Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Arif?
And all three interplay, right? Together.
Of course.
Yes, all three interplay. Mm.
They do. When we come back, I want to find out what exactly you're doing with University of Malaya. Is it just purely looking at, you know, the human interaction or, you know, what's that? We'll come back after the market update on BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome back. It's Mira Sivasuthi. It's The Bigger Picture with me, Dr. Arif Anwar, Professor Lau Yiling and Professor Fong Manyek, all geneticists. We're discussing malaria and research as far as genetics is concerned. You know, Dr. Arif, I mean, why did you decide that you wanted to bridge this gap between the interaction of genetics between the mosquitoes as well as humans, and why malaria? I mean, you could have gone with dengue if you really wanted to.
Well, actually, you know, like I was saying earlier, one of our core focus areas, I know I don't talk about this a lot usually from a research perspective, is looking at what happens to humans when they're under some sort of stress, right? So it could be a disease, it could be a drug, it could be stress, right? Or it could be an infection. That is actually very, very, we have this, you know, a very powerful technology to look at what's happening in an entire body across thousands of proteins and antibodies in an entire human at one go. You know, we can do it in one step. So the reason why we're, you know, looking at malaria, for example, is, you know, it's globally, it's a very significant, still has a very significant footprint in terms of disease.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're able to figure out what's happening in malaria as a model system, as a parasite as well, then, you know, you can extrapolate those findings to other diseases, other infections caused by parasites or bacterial viruses. Yeah.
So what does your research entail as far as the human beings are concerned?
Well,
and how do you interact?
Yeah,
with
so
the
for
researchers?
Example, what we do is we work with Professor. For example, we're working with Professor Lau and Professor Fong here. We would have samples from humans who have been infected, And then we would basically look at what antibodies there are to different proteins in each sample. And then we also have samples that are normal, uninfected. And then basically we're comparing the difference. And it's quantitative. So you can look at, you know, you can say this one is up by 10-fold and this one is up by 50-fold and this one is down. And then you can try and come up and then working together as a team, you know, try and work out what that means. What does it mean when this particular protein is more responsive? What does that mean in terms of the infection or what the parasite could be doing inside the host? And then that gives clues in terms of how you could counteract it, how you could develop a vaccine or a drug or understand it more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is this fundamental theme in genetics, which is conservation. You know, you find that many things are quite similar in different related or unrelated organisms. So things you find in one organism, you know, usually that can have some bearing on helping you to guide research on another area. So, you know, if you can get close to working out what's happening in malaria, then it could help with understanding other parasitic infections or other malaria, mosquito-borne diseases.
But for this purpose, what are you looking at? Maybe hoping to come up with a diagnostic process or treatment? What is your ultimate aim?
It's just the beginning of the study. We just want to look at the immune response. When we look at the antibodies, means we look at the immune response of the patients during the infections. Hopefully, by having all this data, later on we can have some intervention on how to stop the infections by looking at the immune response.
Have you seen any trends as yet, or is it too early?
The project will begin next week.
We're just
we'll come back a month later.
So maybe if you invite us in 6 months' time, then we'll tell you.
I'd be happy to find out, you know. And I'll be even more happy if you start working on dengue, actually.
There are people working on dengue.
There are a lot of people in Malaysia working on dengue.
Mm-hmm.
It's really crowded, so we're trying to find a niche for ourselves.
Yeah. No, I mean, in the same faculty, there are people working on at University of Malaya working on dengue as well.
Okay, so for the moment, I mean, we have a vaccine which, you know, could probably be 50% effective. But what are the treatment options if, you know, before the vaccine even came about? I mean, how do you treat malaria?
Now we are having combination of drugs in order to treat the drug-resistant strain. So we're actually adding, I mean, few drugs together. Mm-hmm. That's why it's a combination.
How successful has it been?
It's pretty effective, basically. Apart from one drug that has been shown to be, the parasite shown have resistance, apart from that, there are still a lot of options of several different drugs, and we prefer to use it in combination so that they are more effective and to reduce any possibility of the resistant being appearing again in the parasite. So, as far as I have seen, it's pretty good combination of drugs to actually treat malaria infection.
Yeah. I mean, people often say, you know, the best way to get rid of malaria or dengue is just get rid of the bloody mosquito, right? And it's gone. But you know, if you look at historically, you know, viruses, bacteria, you know, things that are pests, they're very, very difficult to completely eradicate. Mm-hmm.
They're always three steps ahead of us.
Yeah, there's always some. There's always some. You know, you look at polio, for example. You know, there's you know, it's a reappearing in certain countries. In Syria, they've had an outbreak of polio. So, you know, I mean, the best, most effective way is to do what Professor Fong and Professor Lau are doing, which is do research, understand, and really kill it from the pivot point, which is the biology of it, rather than the mosquito, because, you know, mosquitoes will find a way. There'll be some variant that's resistant to whatever you do. I mean, there was a company from Oxford which was slightly controversial. They were doing this. They were using genetically modified mosquitoes that, when they bred with the female, would produce, you know, basically kill off the offspring.
In fact,
we have
a question here from Sly, and he's asking, what happened to the genetically modified mosquito to fight dengue?
It was released. There was time it released, but I think after that they planned to shut it down, so they forked the whole thing.
The thing is, as what Ari have said, it is quite controversial. You are releasing a genetically modified organism into the environment, which you may not be able to control. Yeah. You know, as far as the ecology and the food chain and all these things and so on. So there were people who are against it. Environmentalists who want to win it, but on the other side, and there are people who are, you know, say this is the most effective way of really eliminating the mosquitoes. So See, where
so you're not gonna, you're not, you don't suggest going down that path then. Genetically,
well, we won't know what's going to happen if you release the mosquito.
Yeah.
Another species may come out and then may carry another infection.
Yeah. The fear is that, you know, people say, oh, once you modify an organism, put that, it's like Frankenstein type of thing. So, you know, where Hollywood will always play.
I mean, you might end up with a super mosquito.
Yeah.
No, seriously, because I tell you
why.
If you look at, you know, MRSA, which we talk about sometimes, right, which is this infection which is common in hospitals,
yes,
right, and that's happened because you have lots of antibiotics and you disinfect and you get survival of the fittest bacteria and they become so resistant to everything that nothing can wipe them out.
Yeah.
And even if you look at the if I'm referring to the question from the, is that from Twitter?
That's via text message.
So answering that question, even the trial that they did, it was done in different countries, not just Malaysia. What they found is 5% of the mosquitoes didn't actually die, right? So you did have some survival.
Mm-hmm.
That's worrying because that means these things are for whatever reason able to escape the mechanism, and then you might end up with a bigger problem than you started with.
Yeah. So you wouldn't go down that path of genetically
worrying.
Modifying. Yes. What about genetically modifying the parasite? Would that effect be the same?
On paper, yes, but it's pretty impossible for you to modify the parasite and to control it.
Because it's in so it's human population, you can't make it into every individual.
Yes.
So it's very hard to modify the parasite.
It'd be really improbable to administer. I mean, you would have to, I don't know how you'd do it.
Or you could genetically modify
everybody.
The human.
I think the best way.
Oh, okay.
Slightly less controversial right now.
Which I think you'd be happy to
maybe
do if it wasn't so.
Superhumans. We go back to the discussion with George. He's not here today.
I wasn't.
I hope he doesn't call in. I hope he's working. I hope he's doing some work.
Adam, okay, just to finish off, Adam Lee's asking, which is worse, dengue or malaria? Adam Lee's asking, which is worse, dengue or malaria?
In terms of mortality and morbidity, of course, malaria.
In Malaysia.
I should think in Malaysia.
Malaysia, dengue is a more problem.
Yes. Yeah. So far, we have higher infection of dengue compared to malaria.
Malaria, you have drugs for it, and if you really control it well, then it is okay. But dengue, even in urban areas, people, you know, you can have a dengue, and you know, high density places like in Klang Valley and so on, you have dengue cases, and some of them degenerate into shock syndrome and hemorrhagic fever, which can be fatal. And there's no drugs for treating dengue. Whereas malaria, you can still intervene, you know. By
and the difference is because one is a virus and the other one is a parasite. Yes. So parasites are
still manageable.
We have drugs for plasmodium, but for the malaria infections.
Okay.
But for dengue, we have to manage the patients. If many much come to early diagnosis, so when the patient come in, we have to do our work. Yeah. But the symptom is quite similar. They're having fever and things like that. That's why sometimes we have to run both tests for patient coming with fever.
Oh, really? Right.
Yeah, when the person comes in with fever,
we have to run.
So we have to do all sort of diagnostic tests just to rule out dengue or malaria. And so
now you have chikungunya as well.
Oh, yes. Chikungunya mimics dengue.
Yes.
So it's you've got very similar. There are very similar symptoms.
Exactly.
Right?
It's bone breaking. Chikungunya, you know,
can't tell at the beginning.
That hence the reason why they wait 3 days and then, you know,
fear come and go.
That's right.
I mean, the normal people may not know how to differentiate just by looking at the symptoms.
Right.
Okay, we have one more interesting question from Jason, and he's saying genetically modified insects have been used to control infectious pathogens in the 60s and have proven to be effective. Caution, yes. Avoiding the technology altogether is regressive.
In the 60s?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, okay, we were
Jason had a misconception of genetically modified. In the 60s, basically, you irradiate the insect.
Oh, right. Yes,
let them mutate.
It's
not targeted modification. No, yes, you irradiate with X-ray or ultraviolet and gamma radiation.
Genetic modification means we alter the genetic of that organism. And in the 60s, I don't think we have that.
The technology.
Oh, okay, sorry, you're right. You're right.
Yes.
Mm. No, it's a terrible technique, using radiation to create mutated things.
Just radiate the organism to hopefully mutate the genes.
Hopefully. But the present technology allows you to really modify the organism to the characteristic or trait that you really want.
You can pinpoint.
In the 60s and 70s, you just it's like brute force type of genetically modified. You just irradiate the mosquito population or the fly population.
And hope for the best.
And hope for the best and release them. And you don't know what is actually happened to the
It would be the equivalent of insects. You know, blowing up your house just to get rid of a mosquito. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yes, that is absolutely correct.
Pinpoint, you know.
Yes.
Okay.
Modern very genetics. Well illustrated.
Yeah, 60s, there was no way of doing genetic engineering.
Yes, and then the one who protests during that time.
I don't remember that one.
Yes. The irradiation and all the things.
And nobody will protest, you said.
Yeah, nobody will protest during that time. I don't think we can do it now.
No, during that time, there was no internet and so on. So people are less well
most
aware of things.
Most likely after you release, no one will know anyway.
Now we have the Generation Y who knows everything.
Well, in the 60s, people used to go and watch nuclear bomb explosions in the US when they were doing them as tests. They would all go with little glasses and watch them. There you go.
Ignorance, I suppose. We're very well, you know, more informed today. Yes. Mm-hmm. Your message on genetics research in malaria, what would you like to leave us with?
Message on malaria, control.
And the work that, and in the work that you're doing.
In the work, okay.
What are you hoping for?
We're actually looking at the parasite, the genetic makeup of the parasite a lot in our labs. So we have a lot of patients coming in and we look at the parasite genetic diversity. We do a lot of sequencing to look at the genetic profile of individual when they get infections. And we do see a lot of differences between every single patient in our lab, which means that the parasite itself is quite diverse. So in order to control the infections, I think we still have a long way to go.
Okay. Yeah. Professor Fong?
Both of us are working on the same theme, so basically what I want to know, I'm more interested in looking at the differences of the parasites. No, I've seen parasites in Sabah and Sarawak is slightly different from the one in Peninsular Malaysia. So what are the implications of these differences? We don't know. There's still a really a gap of information in this, so we want to answer all these questions.
I think my kind of key point would be, you know, it's a complex thing to work on, because you have multiple systems at play. You've got the host, which is the mosquito. The vector, which is the mosquito. You've got the parasite, and then there's the human variability. So I think the key point I would like to say to end is, you know, it's teamwork. You've got to work together and understand each system. And then try and link it together to see if it means something that could be used to advance research.
You're very hopeful, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think things are moving again. You know, there are technologies available where you know you can do sequencing of parasites or genomes of parasites. Look at the immunology. Whereas 5-10 years ago, it would have been too expensive to do it routinely. Whereas now, you know, you can do it in a few months. So that gives everyone great hope that we can move forward quickly.
Thank you all very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Dr. Arif Anwar, resident geneticist, Professor Lau Yi Ling, and Professor Fong Man Yik, both from the Department of Parasitology, Faculty of Medicine at University of Malaya, on the genetics research in malaria on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.